are moving on now to a subject and to people whom I suspect you will be delighted to hear. It's the right time of year anyway. And it's a subject matter that gives great pleasure. Of all the people who get to have a gorgeous flower called after them, a gardener who spent a lifetime devoted to the craft must surely be among the most deserving. Well, Dermot O'Meal has been broadcasting on all issues relating to horticulture since the 1980s and has had a gardening section on the RTE Guide for the past 20 years. And he now also has a species of the Queen of Trees, a magnolia named in his honour. And joining us in the Cork studio is the man who has named a magnolia, the Dermot O'Neill, and who is himself a gardener of incredibility and ability and knowledge. Anyway, is Michael White. He's curator of the glorious Mount Congreve Gardens in County Waterford. And the two of you are welcome to the programme. As I say, Michael is in Cork and Dermot is here beside
me. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon to you. Before we go any further, Dermot, I want to know how your health is.
My health is good. I get regular checkups because my health was so bad, the doctors still keep an eye on me. What's at the moment bothering me, I've hay fever, and I hadn't hay fever before, and last year it hit me, and this year very bad.
That's not a very good choice for a gardener.
It's terrible.
I wouldn't have thought so.
It's being managed, but it's not a nice thing to have. And I would have dismissed it before. Now I realise it's quite a problem.
Debilitating.
Yes,
it
can
some
be.
Some people get a terrible time with it. Now, remind us what you did. You had a beautiful garden in Dublin, I believe, and then you bought a walled garden in Laois. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, tell us what happened.
Okay, well, I always felt that a dream in my mind would be to own a walled garden. And when I was very young, I remember a walled garden in Cabinteely in Dublin, owned by the late Barney Johnson, who was
That was the garden centre.
He had a garden centre, but at the back was an old, old walled garden. Fabulous. And to me, it was like another world. And in my mind, I thought, in my life, I wonder would I ever owned something like this. So it was really a true dream. And from being a teenager up to being a young adult, it was always there in my mind.
Right.
And then I managed to buy a property while still doing gardening and working away here. I just couldn't believe this came up. I decided I'd sell the place I had in Dublin and my mum, well, I'm very close. Sadly, she has passed away last Christmas and still miss her terribly.
But
I was very close and she would say, look, we'll go and drive around and have a look. And so we went around the country and she said, we don't want it to be too far. And we headed towards Port Laois.
Yeah.
And I said, great. It was kind of just an hour, maybe half away. And the roads were very good. And as we went wandering, we saw various signs in places.
Yeah.
And one was there with a big thing, plantiglas walled garden. And they were selling the walled garden, but they were selling the stone. And I said, that's strange. They wanted to sell the stone and get rid of the walled garden.
Right.
I said, I'd like to have a look at that. So we meandered through roads and found it. And fantastic. I couldn't believe what I saw. And I got to see it and I went in. When I saw it first, it was an old walled garden. Now, since I'd found out more, it was built around 1821.
Right.
And the Pym family were the original owners, a very famous family with a drapery shop in Dublin.
Right.
But the sisters were living there up till, I think, the 70s.
Right. What condition was it in?
It was, there were sheep in it.
Right.
And a lot of the apple trees had gone. And there were, there was beautiful, tree hedges of yew, but they'd taken them out because I think they were worried about sheep eating yew. So some of the good things were gone, but you could see basically the structure, and there was a tiny little gardener's cottage in the corner, and it was still being used to put sheep into. There was a clay floor, needed a lot of work. But I had the vision and I could actually see beyond. Yeah. I was looking, I could see the original design and that I'd like to put it at a central path and a cross path.
Right.
And looking around, I just knew, I could tell this fabulous soil in this place.
Right.
And I could do, I knew I could do wonders.
And how, I mean, I can't go through every year that you were there.
No, if I break it down for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll break it down. Anyway, it came about that I sold my place in Dublin and it left me enough money to, because it had gone up in value, and it left me enough money to buy just the walled garden.
Right.
Now, I was offered the stable yard, but I couldn't afford it. So I just bought what I knew I could afford, which included the, well, I wouldn't say it was derelict, but degraded little cottage, which I knew I could do something with.
Yeah.
And thrilled, I was kind of over the moon.
So did you live in Dublin?
I had.
And commute?
Initially, yes.
Yeah.
I had to, I had no choice, but I managed.
Yeah.
When you're passionate about something.
This is very true.
Yeah,
and your mother drove you up and down.
My mother was fantastic, and I was very close to her.
Do you not drive yourself?
And now, there's a story. Because I was starting a programme, RTE had me starting a programme, and I became very, very ill. And that illness prevented me from driving.
Oh, right.
Ever again.
Ever again?
Well, because I had to have, without going into great detail, people know, because it was filmed, they had to put a shunt in my cranium.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. Okay. And I pleaded with the professors who were fantastic, Professor Crown, could they do anything? And it's no one will
insure you.
So
you're going to sell it?
So at the moment, I looked after it. We did a television programme for RTE. And I planted it with fabulous things, magnolias, all kinds of gorgeous things. I transformed it into a wonderful, traditional, as it was in 1821, walled garden again.
Right.
And now, because unfortunately my dad's very ill, my mother's gone, and I don't have transport, it's become very difficult. And I thought I'd love to sell it to someone who'd like it, and I've managed to do that.
I've managed to do that. Which takes me to Cork?
Not to the Cork man. I sold it to another man.
Oh, right.
But Cork is another exciting place I visited often. With RTE, I went down with John Cooney and filmed for the RTE guide there several times.
Right.
I'd meet him then. That's usually when I'd met him. And he's a wonderful man, Michael White. He's a curator of these fabulous gardens that I don't think everybody knows about, and they should.
Okay.
Stunning gardens in Waterford.
Michael, you tell me about these stunning gardens in Waterford and how you got involved in all this. I gather it was a summer job.
It was indeed. I suppose if we go back to 1923, a young 16-year-old Ambrose Conger was taken on a visit to Exbury Gardens in Hampshire in England, being developed by Mr. Lionel Rothschild, 250 acres. And they struck up an immediate friendship, and Mr. Lionel, as he was affectionately known to Mr. Congreve, taught him everything he knew about horticulture and gardening.
Yeah?
And it was from that inspiration and generosity that Mr. Ambrose Congreve decided to create a garden here on the banks of the River Shore in 1955, asking his father could he clear 76 acres.
That's a lot of land.
A lot of land. There was 100 men employed, and some of the key philosophies of the garden, and this is what makes it so special in my opinion, is that they said if you have 5 or 50 plants, you must put them together and not dot them around the garden. So they promised they'd plant 25 of each cultivar or species, and went on to plant 50, 100, 200 of each cultivar or species. And that's extraordinary, and you can see the fruition of that every spring.
I'm sure it is. It is a mistake people make, isn't it, to put one here, one there, one over there, rather than keeping them together.
It is, yeah. It's more effective en masse.
Now, you've been working there for 36 years and you say you're still learning.
I did. I was hunted out for a summer job by my mum, my dear mum, and I had no interest in gardening at the time. I wouldn't pull a weed for my poor late mum. So I went out for the summer job and the lads used to play cards in the canteen at lunchtime, and that wasn't for me. So I went walking in the gardens, and after 3 or 4 weeks, I found myself crawling my belly looking for labels, and I knew I was in trouble. So that's where I caught the bug and went off to Kildare in college and came back, and I'm learning ever since.
Yeah. What is the bug?
I suppose it's you meet some extraordinary people, the likes of Dermot, and it breaks down all barriers, gardener, and you're always learning. I go to my grave learning, Mary, and I know nothing, and that's the beauty of it.
Right.
And there's such a close correlation between history and plants as well that fascinates me.
In what way?
Well, take, for example, Magnolia sulangiana.
Yeah?
That's one of the first man-made crosses, going back to 1820. And that was named for a guy called Chevalier Etienne Sulan Bowden. He was a cavalry officer in Napoleon's army. And he was sickened by the Napoleonic Wars, where he wrote in the Gardener's Chronicle in 1819, "It is not for me," he said, "to retrace the path for the beaten or the beaters. Yet it was with sword in hand," he said, "I visited the botanical collections of Vienna, Stuttgart, Moscow, where the statues of both Flora and Pomona were thrown down and substituted with that of Bologna. It should have been better," he said, "had everyone stayed at home and grown their cabbages. Yet," he said, "on returning, it is to the rise in taste and horticulture that is the most agreeable guarantee for the repose of the world." So he was the first person to make that cross in 1823.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have now spent 6 years cataloguing all the magnolia in the garden. Will you tell me a little bit about your relationship? Sorry, you want to come in there?
Can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
It's one of the finest collections in the world. But as you go on, I just want people to know that we're not talking about a collection being catalogued. You're talking about something outstanding, really important.
Why do you say that?
It's the collection is so varied, so many different types, and it's planted on such a large scale. It's very special.
OK, back to you, Michael. So tell me about you and the magnolia.
Well, we grow over 300 different types of species and cultivars in the collection. But one particularly visionary planting undertaken by the late garden director Herman Dool in 1961. He collected seed from some of our mature Magnolia Campbellias. They raised 300 plants and he decided to plant two Magnolia Campbelliae walks. These are tree magnolias from the Asiatic. 100 deep, sweeping down to the River Shore. 100 deep, imagine. So when you can see them in flowering, usually either side of St. Patrick's Day, they can be seen from 10 kilometres across the river.
Can they really?
They can, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So they were at their own Mount Congreve seedlings. So over the years, we evaluated them. And out of that 300, we reckon 15 were worth naming. 8 have been named. One, of course, for Dermot O'Neill. We're still evaluating the other 7.
OK, why Dermot?
Why Dermot? Well, he came to do a programme in the garden. We discussed it with other gardeners here, and we thought, for his immense contribution to Irish horticulture, is there a garden in Ireland that hasn't got a rose that Dermot recommended? You can hear him when he speaks his passion and enthusiasm, and that comes across to everyone. So we felt it was worthwhile honouring him and naming a magnolia for him.
And will you describe it to me, please?
It's a lovely, rich, pink water lily type and just sits perfectly up in the tree. It's just a beautiful type. It's a strong colour and a perfectly formed flower. It's a quality plant, as is Dermot a quality man.
There you go. Dermot, what do you think of the plant?
I'm really embarrassed, and when it happened, I just was overwhelmed. The plant is outstanding, a very, very special plant you don't see every day. It's a really exceptional magnolia, and to have one like that named after you is really exceptional. So it's very special, the plant on its own, even if it wasn't named after me, it's
right.
Something really magnificent.
Right.
And then to have something like that named after you, I was so embarrassed. I didn't expect that.
Right.
And so honoured. I have to say, I'm very honoured.
As are we.
Yeah. They have a reputation for being a bit difficult in that you can plant one and you get nothing for 6 or 7 years.
Well, you can Magnolia Campbellia, especially wild collected, Marion, you can wait 30 years for the first flower.
Oh, cheers.
Indeed, one breeder waited 30 years and it turned out to be miserable and he had to cut it to the ground.
Oh, no. Yeah. That'll put the whole country off this now.
Well, no, that was Magnolia Campbellia. But the exciting thing was there was a nurseryman in New Zealand called Oz Bloomhart. And this was a sensational break in magnolia breeding where he hybridised Magnolia Campbellia, the tree one, with a shrubby one called Lilla Flora. And from resulting seedlings, he named 3. Star Wars,
yeah.
which flowers on a 3-year-old plant with these huge flowers.
Right.
So that was an extraordinary break in magnolia hybridisation.
Special.
Yeah.
So, Tree, I mean, if you wandered into your garden centre, I mean, you rear your own and all that kind of thing, but for your average Joe or Josephine, if they wandered into the garden centre, will they already be 3 years old?
Oh, gosh, they will, yeah. I mean, there's a magnolia for every garden. I mean, this Vance Hooper has a new hybrid out called Genie. And the reason he called it Genie was it delivered him 3 wishes. It flowers from a young age, it's a good breeder and has perfect colour. So that only grows to, what, maybe a metre and a half in a small column. But there's a magnolia for every garden.
All right, so that would do for a small garden in a city,
of course,
very well.
Yeah, or the series of the 8 girls are small as well. They're crosses between Stellata and Lilliflower, raised in America and named for the wives or secretaries of the two guys that crossed them.
And tell me, is it a very short flowering season?
No, we have our first magnolias start in mid to late February. The two that first come out are one called the magnolia with the telephone number. And the reason it was called that was George Forrest collected seed in Yunnan in 1924. And from that seed, only 3 plants were raised. Two were named after Cornish Gardens, Worthington and Lanart, the other after Board Hill in Sussex. The owner of Worthington christened it affectionately the magnolia with the telephone number because it was introduced under F25655. And that was the same number of digits as the British telephone number at the time.
All right.
And it comes out in these cloudy skies in February with these vintage port flowers on leafless stems. It's an extraordinary sight.
Stunning. Mm.
Yeah. The other is one that we named here, and it has an interesting, funny, quite amusing story. In the first week in February in 2004, one of the gardeners came to me inquiring about yellow flowering magnolias. I said, it's far too early, come back in 8 weeks. He didn't, he came back the following week and he said, I see one of these yellow magnolias flowering. I said, where is it? And he explained where it was and it was one we procured as Magnolia Campbellia alba, white form. So I rushed down to see it and rather than one or two or flowers, it had a huge crown of primrose yellow flowers with a pink flash. And I'd read about this magnolia being seen in the wild in 1982 by a magnolia expert called Morris Foster. So I carefully removed 2 flowers. And I was due up to Mr. Conger's library for a morning brief, and I knocked on the door and entered, and he saw him, and straight away his cigar nearly fell from his mouth. He said, where did you get them, Michael? Because he knew there was something special at that time of year. And I explained the magnolia we procured as a white one, and I explained what I thought it was. Oh, he said, what are we going to name it? And I said, it's the 14th of February, Mr. Conger. We surely have to name it Valentine's Torch. So he took a few more puffs on his cigar and paused for a while and he said, no, I shouldn't burden it, he said, with that romantic attachment. He said, name it for my wife. We already knew there was one named for his wife in the garden, so we left Valentine retain his torch.
Okay. Yeah. And now, where did the magnolia fit into your garden?
Well, it's taken some time to propagate.
Yeah.
And because I'm leaving that garden, it hasn't got one yet. But Michael has been good enough to organise. And what I said I'd like to do is have one planted that everybody could enjoy. So I contacted Seamus O'Brien, who looks after the botanic gardens in Kilmacurra. Dublin has Glasnevin, everybody knows the garden.
Yes, yeah.
But they also have a similar garden that they own, open to the public, in Wicklow, with more neutral, acidic type soil.
Oh, right.
And it was done on purpose, not just for magnolias, so that they could grow a wider range of plants.
Right.
So it is a National Botanic Gardens collection.
Okay.
And he came back and he said, oh, we discussed it and we'd be over the moon to have a plant. And so they've decided, and was specially propagated, so the one that was coming to me, I asked, could it go there? And they're going to plant it for everyone to enjoy.
Well, what a generous idea.
Well, I thought it was a nice thing to do.
Yes, that absolutely is. There's something special about you garden nutters. You know, you kind of share a lot with one another, both in terms of information.
We recognise the symptoms, Marion.
Yeah, and that does it. Your gardens, when are they open?
We're open all year round.
Are you all year round now?
From June to September, 7 days a week, and then 4 days a week from then on. We're having a summer fair on the 14th of July, our family fun day, and the kids will have a treasure hunt, and there'll be pop-up artisan stalls there and everything.
And plenty
of walks to do.
And now tell me where you are, Dermot. I mean, you're still working away. Are you doing the travel department guides and all that? You're not doing that anymore?
No, I'm doing the RT guide.
Yeah?
I'm doing that you see practically every week when you open it, I'm there.
Yeah.
And I do occasional talks, but as my family haven't been well, that's taken a lot of my time.
Okay.
But I have a list of talks I'm going to be doing. And I suppose I'm not doing as much as I did.
Right.
And it's hard reminding.
I know. So, of course, yeah, it's a very time-consuming and naturally enough, loads of people are fully aware of that. So what do you do for your withdrawal symptoms?
Well, at the moment, I'm working on my mother's garden, which is too tiny to put a magnolia like that in.
Right.
But I've it packed full of gorgeous things.
Right.
And I'm getting great pleasure and enjoyment from that. But I'll have to make new plans, and I can still go round and talk. I was in Kelly's earlier in the year and had a big crowd. I move around and I meet people. Everywhere I go, I'm stopped.
Right.
Because a lot of people watched the programme when I was ill and the garden's being developed.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled the new guy, Paul Brady, who's taking it over, is qualifying as a horticulturalist. And he's passionate too. And he said, you created this garden, and you're more than welcome to visit whenever you like.
Isn't that very nice?
And I get on well with him. So he's made me feel that though he's taking and going to do his own thing, that he said he's going to retain things I did and I'm welcome. And he said, I'll also need you to name various things, because there'll be lots of things, unusual things,
okay,
that wouldn't be known.
Okay, so you won't fully have lost contact.
No, so I'm delighted about that.
Now, tell Dermot to take locally, I've heard this before, to take locally sourced honey daily. It builds a resistance to hay fever. I've heard that many, many, many times, but have you ever tried it?
I love honey, but to know you're getting local honey, and people have said Manuka honey. I've got the whole honey thing, but I don't know who's doing local honey.
Okay. Another caller says, I love to listen to Dermot, a fountain of knowledge, which is true. Another caller says, Dermot O'Neill is such a gentleman. Congratulations and best wishes for the future. And that comes from Brian in Dublin. Another caller says, Marion, please help. Ask your guests what I should do. I've just bought a house with 5.7 acres. Oh, Jane.
Wow.
That's a lot of land.
Yes.
Overgrown around it, but plenty of green grass around the house, circa 2 acres. What do they think I should do? I would like to use it, perhaps build a walled garden.
Right.
She's thinking big.
The way I'd approach it is I'd say take it in projects. It's too big to do all. Get a general idea and then take projects.
Do a master plan maybe?
Yes, and then let's say she wants a walled garden. Focus on that, do that well and make sure it's right. Sorry, right,
okay.
Hitting the microphone.
Yeah.
And then have, say, the next project and so on and so on. And that they all kind of connect together, that there's something running through it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have fabulous designers. I think if you're passionate about gardening and you can grow what you love, but make sure you look after the soil. Soil is number one. It's all about having good quality soil. And example, Michael would tell us this in the gardens when Ambrose Congreve went. He had a big job to do to plant these fantastic plants. Like magnolias will not grow in every soil, but if this woman wants to grow magnolias, check the soil and improve it organically. There's all kinds of things you can do. Fantastic things to be done. I think just have a great time, make a beautiful place and make a plan and do it by projects.
Right, Michael?
Yes, exactly. Firstly, get it under control and then do it project by project.
Yeah.
And remember, and think 50 years on, because I often see people developing gardens and, of course, as they get older, they can't manage it. No garden should ever become a burden, and that's the key to it. So manage it project by project and see what you can manage.
There you go. Yeah. Well, at least she's thinking big.
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that she obviously really wants to get stuck in. Congratulations to Dermot. When will a tree be called after Michael White?
We never spent
2.5 hours more happily than with Michael in Mount Congreve, says this caller, and thank you. That's a fair question, isn't it?
Yeah, and Michael is a fantastic man and a fantastic gardener. And every time I meet him, it's a total pleasure. And not just because he's naming plants, he's a very knowledgeable man.
Still learning, Dermot, still learning.
Of course, so am I. I learn every day and every time.
We'll go to our grave learning.
Yeah, we will.
I think it would be remiss of me to say, as I'm sitting here in Cork, Magnolia campbellii flowered for the first time in cultivation in the garden of William Crawford at Lakelands of Cork in 1885. Right. 10 years later in Fota, and it won a first-class certificate from the RHS when it was exhibited by none other than W. E. Gumbel of Belgrove in Cork, whose library was donated to the
National
Botanic
Gardens. You're sucking up to them because you're in Cork. Is that it?
I might be staying the night.
His knowledge is amazing. He's amazing knowledge, as you can hear. Fabulous. I'm passionate about each plant.
Okay.
He's the right man to be the curator there, really, truly.
And too kind.
Passionate.
How much does it cost to visit Mount Congreve?
It's €7 per person. Children under 12 are free.
Right, okay. Another says, Dermot, 3 stars, you are the universal magnolia. And this is the last one now because I'm going to have to go. Hi, Marion, could you ask the lads why my young magnolia grandiflora trees have black spots and brown leaves?
Oh, dear.
They're shooting new leaves, but the trees seem tarred, planted at the edge of woodland.
Can I start with that?
Sure.
I've had trouble in my own garden with Magnolia grandiflora. It's a stunning thing. Huge, big, scented, usually cream flowers generally.
Yeah.
And there are many different types. And on the market, there are newer, smaller ones that flower earlier. A stunning thing to have. But it is tricky. And usually, if it dries out once, a problem. You have to keep it evenly moist at the beginning.
Yeah.
And also make sure that the soil is reasonably, not overfed, but reasonably fed. If it's too weak or poor, it's not going to help. It needs a little feeding. And I find in Clontiglas, where you are, it's neutral. And the magnolias, apart from that particular one, just took off. They are amazing. They loved it.
Yeah.
But that magnolia was kind of sulking.
And why? Not enough acid or not?
No, it was alkaline and probably just needed a little extra attention.
Right. But is there any cure?
I think mind it and make sure the soil around it is correct. And we'll see if it can be tricky. Some people plant it against a wall because it doesn't like it too cold.
Yeah.
And I think Michael might be able to give a final answer to that.
Right.
I
mean, briefly.
It's a leaf spot, so I wouldn't be too concerned about it. It's probably due to the plant was stressed out with the drought last summer. Mm-hmm. The new foliage come out, I wouldn't be too worried.
Hate drought. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
There you go. Listen, congratulations.
Thank you.
To you on the honour, and congratulations to Michael on the accolades. And thank you both very much indeed for talking to us, and we'll take a break.